Two Guys Talking has been pioneering television and feature film fandom interaction for a long time. First, it was the 24 podcast and Terminator podcast from Fox. Then to Showtime for season 4, 5, and 6 of the Dexter podcast. And now, the time has come for our next grand effort following HBO's True Blood and
All Things with Fangs in Entertainment.
Two Guys Talking is proud to announce the Fang Banger podcast, providing you with yet another platform of fandom interaction unlike any other. Don't miss the Fang Banger podcast, recording live at lunchtime each Monday, and a new Fang Banger podcast every Monday that will hopefully satisfy your True Blood bloodlust, creature feature review hankerings, and beyond. It's the Fang Banger podcast, only from Two Guys Talking. FangBangerPodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Paul Spataro. Be sure to tune in to the Two Guys Talking review of Star Trek here on the Two Guys Talking Network.
Two Guys Talking is an internet radio show providing you with entertainment, a sharing of viewpoints, and fun. Join us as we venture into the world of entertainment and discuss a variety of topics, from television shows, DVDs, feature films, and more. This week, Two Guys Talking.
Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen.
There have been three entries for the Transformers via the Two Guys Talking podcast. First was the Two Guys Talking DVD review of the 20th anniversary of Transformers the movie. It was an animated romp that still, to this day, holds true honor in our DVD collections. Then we had the first Transformers offering from director Michael Bay in 2007, providing you the CGI real-life versions of ass-kicking giant robots from outer space. That, too, was a stellar, if not quick, romp into the land of Optimus Prime, Megatron, and the whole transforming funky bunch. Now comes the sequel, the Digital Megilla, that will revisit the lands of bots that transform and roll out. Add on new villains, robots that challenge the imagination, and an additional 16 minutes of runtime, quirks aplenty, and enough fodder and critics to nitpick until the actual Transformers return to Earth, and you have Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen. It's time for the Two Guys Talking review of Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen, here on the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network. Greetings, everybody. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
And this is Kip Lewis, the second host.
And I'm Dave Zeronis, your third host.
Kip Lewis comes to us from the Two Guys Talking television review blogs and is also a caption hunt writer that traverses the digital domain into our podcast studio every time we have comic books that come a-calling in the digital realm. Thanks for coming in, Kip.
Well, thank you for having me.
Dave Zeronis is an old classmate from Brookfield Central back in the 1980s, which, if you'll remember, is the generation that spurred the love of the magical transforming robots in all of our imaginations. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So, guys, this is going to be a really goony review. I so much want to tear this movie a new one, but I love the subject matter, because I still do. Even after all of this, after seeing the film, after seeing the previous film, after doing all the review podcasts, I still love this content.
I know. I still want to see the movie again. I probably will watch the movie again.
Yeah, no, I agree. I enjoyed the movie thoroughly for what it was. Later on, of course, we'll get into some of the nitpicking things about the movie, but I'm definitely going to buy it when it comes out on Blu-ray, and I look forward to watching it over and over again.
Yeah, just a couple of quick housekeeping items before we get into this review, guys. We truly appreciate all of the input that we receive for all of the summer feature film review podcasts. Tony and I are still wading through the sea of Terminator podcast input about the most recent Terminator film, Terminator Salvation, as well as the Star Trek review that, well, I mean, it was just one of the best reviews ever for one of the coolest pictures I can remember in a good long time. Remember to keep sending your input about those and all of our podcasts. We really, really appreciate it. Second, I wanted to let everyone know that I've had the distinction of being brought into the writing staff of a website that I've been promoting over at ScreenRant.com. I've just authored a couple of really great articles. Dave had just mentioned the Blu-rays, and I just finished up a great article called Blu-ray, Is It Time to Make the Move? And it talks not only about the whys, but also gives you some of the really great details about the tech, the pluses, and the minuses of Blu-ray. And man, the comments, they're just really something to marvel at. Thanks for those, everybody.
The second article that I wrapped up late last week was to commemorate the recent 40th anniversary of the moon landing. I actually made an article that focused on the top five astronaut films of all time that, boy, they're just a great list of films and some of the coolest human spaceflight stuff ever. You need to make sure to go over and see that. And again, you can see that at ScreenRant.com. The comments about that one and the community that they've grown over at ScreenRant.com. Be sure to check out all of those articles and also the comments on both of those articles, as well as my future feature articles over at ScreenRant.com. A quick caption hunt note. For those of you that don't know, we do a great program called the Caption Hunt that allows us to search and find open and closed captioning in today's modern entertainment realm. We welcomed on a great new sponsor called the Sachs Group, which provides us with now four sponsors for a really great program. The data that we capture with that program allows us to make the best buyer's guide for the deaf and hard of hearing community. It's something really, really special and unique. Be sure to check out the Caption Hunt over at CaptionHunt.com. You can also see more about that over at TwoGuysTalking.com. Just click any of the banners that say the hunt has begun. The last little bit is to feature yet another great contest from our friends over at Electric Artists and A&E. They're offering up an excellent DVD series package, The Best of 48 Hours, which, if you haven't seen the show ever, it's kind of a guilty pleasure of mine. I don't know about you guys, but it's great stuff. Murder mystery, the tech of people getting pinched for trying to do bad things to people. It's really riveting stuff. The contest is simple. You send us feedback about this or any other summer feature film podcast review, and you'll be entered into that drawing for it. It's more than 5 hours over two DVDs, so, I mean, you've really got some bang for your buck there. Remember, too, that A&D is always wanting you to check out their new stuff. They've got a new series called The Cleaner. They're going to want you to go check out their website, check out the Facebook set for that Fan That, check out their Twitter feed sets, all of that. All of that's available via the banner links over at our website at twoguystalking.com. Again, thanks to everyone that makes doing more of these great Two Guys Talking podcast shows and the contests. I mean, it's great summer fun, and all sponsored by our friends at Sprint's Relay Missouri, Acoustica's Mixcraft Recording Software, and Ability Interpreting. Let's get straight to the review of Transformers: The Revenge of the Fallen. The Hype! Dave, do you remember when you heard this movie was coming out officially?
It was probably a trailer that I saw attached to another movie, and I can't remember for the life of me because I was sitting in the theater and I saw a trailer for it, and I said, I wish I was actually watching that movie now instead of what I was watching. I really wish I could remember what I was, but yeah. I think it was the Indiana Jones movie or something. I really don't know.
Yeah, that's very possible, and boy, we hated us some Indiana Jones 4.
Don't mention five.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I was just thinking, what was the hype? But then I'm thinking, wasn't this movie being advertised for like 3 months before the movie even came out?
This is one of those movies, when we look at the number, or look at the dollar amount that the previous film made, I knew that the sequel was coming 15 minutes into this film, or 15 minutes into that film. I expected there to be a second one. I was expecting something completely different, though.
I expected more of a movie like the first movie, and this movie is quite different.
The money! Guys, every time we talk about a movie like this, we always talk about the giant money-making corn combine of cash. This movie was no exception. This one made just an assload of cash. Do you have any idea what this made opening weekend, Dave?
No, actually, I do not. And I'm hoping you'll be able to tell me that.
I'm going to enlighten you, believe it or not. This movie made $109 million opening weekend. Its domestic take so far, and we're approaching a month after the movie's been released. And so far, domestically, it's made $350 million.
Which is just about the cost of the movie.
Right. And so when we add in the next number, which is the foreign intake number, which is $383 million... suddenly, this looks like there's going to be a third movie instantly. I guarantee you. And a fourth, probably. Worldwide, the movies ended up taking in $733 million.
And that's
just,
like,
again, corn combine of cash.
And that's not even counting the toys.
Yeah, Dave, have you bought any toys, Dave?
Have I bought any toys? No, not yet.
And, you skipped that.
I shouldn't say unfortunately. Let me rephrase that. I have two daughters in the house, so there probably won't be any Transformer toys coming in unless I'm the one buying them.
Maybe you can buy the incredibly female noteworthy Motobots that got destroyed in this film that were the only female robots.
Maybe so. There'll probably be a toy in the McDonald's gift bags or something.
This is where we insert the general spoiler alert for most of our reviews.
As you know, to detail this review, we're going to have to provide spoilers. So if you haven't seen Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, it's time to pause the podcast and then return to it after you've seen it. The good! Oh, there were so many great things inside of this film, which is why this is such a strange review for me. The first thing we're going to talk about is the special effects.
This time around, unlike the first movie, I actually had a hard time in the first movie watching the robots, you know, transform. There was too much going on for the eyes, and I believe you had mentioned, Mike, earlier about it's too close up on it.
Right.
This movie, watching the transformations go on, smooth, perfect, just what you imagined it should have been.
Right, and the big thing that you mentioned there is that they backed up off of them. In particular, the mega fight with the highway in the first film, and all of that long alleyway fight at the end of the first film, all of that, you were just physically too close to the models of the CGI models of the robots, and so you couldn't hardly see anything.
Too much input.
Yeah, inside of this film, they've clearly backed off of the robots, and you get to see them transform. You get to see them roll by the camera, and that is 50% of the equation of believability for them.
Yeah, I agree with that. I like the fact that you could actually see the transformation take place, and it looked very realistic. What I also enjoy, though, when you harken back to the first one, you feel like you're in the fight. You feel like the small little human that you are watching all these giant robots around you, and things do happen fast and furious in a fight like that. And I enjoy that take on it, too.
No, I completely agree with that, and it's great to know that at least one of us has had fights with giant ass-kicking monster robots. Thank you, Dave. Transformers visit ancient Earth. Okay, this is another piece of the movie that totally grabbed me. I love this part when they show ancient Earth with guys with spears and face paint and grass skirts and all kinds of other stuff taking on Transformer robots. That was awesome.
That was different, and it was also a point that I think we should probably bring up in maybe the nitpicking part of it, because we're talking about ancient Earth and we're talking about spear-chucking humans, and there was a fight for their life where they had to suddenly bury this thing. I don't understand. I didn't get that part. Maybe having some insight into the comic books would have helped, but I had no idea where they were going with that. And it sounds to me like you didn't either, so talk about it. I'd like to know what your take is.
Well, my take is this, that they brought it up and then they hide it. And what that makes me, I was expecting something later in the film that harkened back to that. We got it. The problem is that it was two hours plus into the movie that we got the payoff of what you're supposed to expect from the opening minutes of the film, and I don't care for that.
Well, you got it, but I didn't get it. I mean, you see what happened, and I still, I don't know. There's a couple of parts in this movie that I'm still left guessing, and I feel a little ignorant, but am I the only one who missed that? Because I don't understand why all of a sudden they had to shield themselves around the piece there and go into self-destruct mode. Somebody help me out with that.
Well, and I think that's an excellent first call to the audience. Let us know what you think by accessing our website at twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2guystalking.com. Click the contact button on the top right-hand side of the page and let us know what you think. Were there some pieces missing from the story to help pay off what was going on screen? Let us know what you think. Seeing returning cast members. This is a big one. We knew we were going to see Shia LaBeouf. We knew we were going to see the main sergeant, lieutenant, whatever his name is.
The guy from NCIS.
That's not the guy from NCIS.
You're talking about
it's not.
Major Lennox, Josh Duhamel?
Then that's not him. That is not the guy from NCIS. It's not.
You're talking about the White Army guy, right?
Yeah. Yes. The White Army Special Forces dude.
They had the black tech sergeant from the Air Force, too. I'm sorry, he's a master sergeant in this one.
Right, right. Yeah, I love seeing all of those people return, because it would be so easy to write them all off and have no one back except for Sam.
Mike, that's exactly what I was thinking, too, because I had that in my notes here as one of the bullet points, cast continuity from the first film.
Yeah.
You got everybody back, even the smaller characters that played, you know, people, like you said, who could have easily been overlooked in this one for the bigger money characters. They were all brought in on this, and they all had not just bit parts. They had parts that were very integral to the story. A couple of them did.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, likewise.
Death. This ain't no cartoon.
Yeah.
This was awesome.
There are so many visages of death inside of this. You don't see people eviscerated in front of you, but when you see an aircraft carrier go down and you see people being crushed by the stuff that's on an aircraft carrier, when you see helicopters go down and people flying out of the helicopter, they're not getting up and brushing off their shoulders and walking away. I love that out of this.
Or the floating in the water dead. That was a pretty poignant shot, I thought.
That adds so much value to a movie like this, and I don't think people understand that. I would much rather see way more of that than so much of the fodder that's handed to us in the movie later on.
Right. It's an excellent portrayal of the military in general, in my opinion, and it adds a realistic overtone to the movie that draw you in and make it, even though it's a fantasy movie and you really have to let your mind go and get sucked into the fantasy, it does allow you to draw into that and give you points of reality to contact while you're watching the movie. This is really, really pretty cool and pretty realistic and accurate, and it gives you the oh my God factor, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, yeah. As a former serving military guy, what do you think of a movie like this? How is it portraying the Army and the Navy and everybody else?
Well, I think it does a very accurate job for my limited scope with the military. I did 4 years in the Marines, some of you know, some of you don't. I thought it did a very good job of portraying the military in a positive light when a lot of movies don't. They would take the military and they very easily could have made them into a bunch of bumbling idiots running around like the Keystone Cops shooting each other instead of the Transformers, you know, but they didn't do that. They were very meticulous. They had a special operation plan going on. There were contingencies in place. Things didn't happen right away. Like, sure, they had an aircraft carrier group in the area, but they weren't on station right away. It took time to get there. There were a lot of things that I noticed from being on this side of the house that seemed to flow and seem realistic. And you just don't get that in a lot of movies nowadays that have the military as a major character.
One of the things that I like along that lines is usually when you have these shows with aliens coming down to Earth, the U.S. military is impotent against them. They can't do anything. They are, you know, their weapons bounce off. Somebody else has to come in, or some little trick has to be done.
Divine intervention is what you're trying to say. For the military to be effective instead of the lame duck military that they're often portrayed as. And even in this movie, they bring in theoretical technology, which may not be theoretical. It probably is in use somewhere. We just haven't seen it yet. The railgun on the battleship, I thought that was fantastic. It took that giant transformer on top of the pyramid, took him out in one shot, which I was a little disappointed with, per se, because I thought that they could have used that weapon more. I mean, that thing was huge. It was made up of, what, five Decepticons?
Yeah.
It took him out in one shot.
Yeah.
Still pretty cool to see that kind of technology portrayed, and it wasn't something that was unbelievable, because it is a technology that has been in development, and we're all aware of it.
Yeah, I think my favorite piece of the military being represented in these movies is that they take care to not make an entire battalion of red shirt guys. You don't have somebody...
That's a great way to put it.
It really is. Inside the first film, you had the throwaway guy that gets stabbed in the back and thrown like a ragdoll, but it's one guy. It's not an entire legion of people that are... Oh, actually, there is. There is an entire legion in the first film that is completely destroyed, but they're completely destroyed because the power is so overwhelming. It's not that they were stupid.
It's not like artificial intelligence in some of these games like Call of Duty or whatever, where the guys are just running blindly into machine gun fire. No, they're actually doing their job. They're taking cover. They're using their equipment and their assets in ways that the military does. And, hey, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. It happens.
Very well said. The visuals, the venues, the backing off the giant ass-kicking robots, all of those things are at work inside this movie, and they're glorious. All of the vistas that you get to go to, you see Egypt in this glowing, high definition. By the way, Kip and I saw it actually in an IMAX theater, and it was stellar. Yeah. The visual presentations inside this movie were awesome, just incredibly striking.
Yeah, a digital theater. I didn't get to go see it in IMAX, but I was very pleased that I went to a digital theater for a change, because it was very crisp and clear, and the sound was fantastic. It was all over the theater as I wanted it to be.
Having the theater filled with people, I thought, was also a giant bonus. The biggest reason it was the best bonus is because we could tell when they were trying to make a joke that you were supposed to laugh at, but when only 3 and 4 people laugh at the jokes, something's missing.
Humor.
any humor at all. The death of Optimus Prime.
To me, that was one of the pivotal moments in the movie. Up to that point, I think I wasn't quite as engaged in the movie as I wanted to be. But when Optimus, when the blades came through Optimus's chest, took me totally by surprise. I was not expecting it. I was not anticipating that. Just, I did not expect that part of the movie. So it brought me into the movie and to enjoying the movie more so than had they just left Optimus Prime running around for the whole. I mean, not that I'd expected Optimus to not return by the end of the movie. I mean, he is a robot. They're going to fix him.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing that captured me there is that I can remember specifically bitching about it when I was a kid, where you've got 7 and 8 robots gathering around one robot and kicking the one robot's ass. Well, in real life, like we get to see it here inside of the Michael Bay film, he is going to get his ass kicked and he's going to get killed. And so I loved it. I loved that they were able to take that real life representation of 6, 8 robots on one, and the one robot, while strong and valiant, isn't strong and valiant enough, and he ends up getting killed. I love that. I love that.
Yeah, I thought that was a good point. And again, I'm surprised that you guys were taken by it. Not that I wasn't. I was, too, but I thought you guys might have had more insight before you watched the movie that, oh, this kind of thing happens, or more plot line stuff. I went into this movie blind. I didn't listen to any reviews. I didn't read any reviews. I didn't talk to anybody. So everything that came at me was fresh and new, and I had no idea what was happening. And when they stuck the blade in him and he fell on him, I was like, I was completely floored by that. That's a major character.
Oh, yeah.
Don't usually do that in a movie. And, of course, they were going to bring him back. You knew that was somehow going to happen. It had to happen. They couldn't leave him dead.
Yeah.
But it was something, like you said, was completely unexpected. And, again, very realistic. He was doing his best to take care of Shia LaBeouf there, and he just got his ass kicked.
It was excellent. And what it does, the only thing it really throws back to inside of the previous films, the movie, the actual Transformers animated, the movie, Optimus also dies inside of that one. The original death of Optimus Prime is in that old animated film, and it's spectacular. And I can, as I think of it, I can hear the actual soundtrack of the lilting piano of the death of Optimus Prime. This movie brought that into the forefront again, and I really, really like that.
But wisely, they didn't decide to follow the original storyline and have a replacement Prime show up.
Yeah.
By bringing Prime back made more sense because a replacement Prime would have been out of the blue.
Yeah, well, and out of the blue, and then you also would have killed off a character that we can't possibly get rid of.
Right.
If the dude that does the voice isn't dead, that did the voice back then let's keep Optimus.
Keep him as long as the voice actor is still alive.
It's true.
Some of these other actors are dropping. We're going to be in trouble for the sequel.
While there's many things inside of this movie and every movie that are good, there's also the bad. Decepticon looks. In our preamble, Dave touched on this brilliantly. Essentially, when you look at all of the Decepticons, regardless of who they are, even if it's someone that we've seen previously, they all kind of look the same. There's no distinctiveness to any of them.
Yeah, the only time you got any distinctiveness is if they were the animals, the small ones. But when it came to the big ones, they all looked alike. They were the same color pattern.
The ones that appeared in the last gigantic sand battle, it looked like it was all the exact same one.
Well, when Optimus was fighting, I couldn't tell who Optimus was fighting in that scene. I mean, it's like, okay, did you just rip off Megatron's head? No, I guess that wasn't Megatron. I couldn't tell who he was fighting because they all 3, 4, 5, 6, I don't even know how many there were. First movie, they all looked different. They were all clearly different robots.
Yeah.
In this movie, it looked like cut, paste, cut, paste, cut, paste.
Yeah. I almost think they had the digital representation of red shirts for the Decepticons. The difference is that they were gray shirts.
Exactly. As far as the larger ones are concerned, like you said, the smaller ones, which I thought were pretty innovative and pretty well designed, I thought those were pretty easily identified. I mean, they were other objects before they were Decepticons, which was pretty cool. The little one that turns into a truck. You know, they have the one that got poured down the air vent and, like, the nanobots put itself together and it was razor thin, but it was actually able to manipulate stuff and cut through to get the shard out. That was pretty cool. Those were all well done, but the larger robots, they were easily interchangeable. Just like you said, cut paste. Is that Starscream? Is that Megatron? Who is that? I don't know. He's silver, he's big, and he's got lots of guns, and he's kicking somebody's ass.
Vulgar humor. Robot balls. The thong view. Minority bots. Can we get a collective of everybody to say, we hate all of this? There's no need for any of it.
When Mike and I walked out of the theater, the two of us are like, okay, if we just cut the vulgar, the humor out of the movie, we would have enjoyed the movie 10 times more than we did.
And?
We would actually want to make a cut of the movie without the humor and see how much we'd actually like this movie.
Yeah, and when we mention that to our fan base, we get stellar input about how they would love for us to do that. The difference is that we'd go to jail.
Unfortunately, that's the byproduct of that, but I think anybody who's going to own the Blu-ray is probably going to skip ahead when they get to those scenes that they saw in the theater and say, you know, I just don't need this. This should have been on the cutting room floor anyway, and they're going to see the movie that that we're talking about right now, that we all want to see, that where all that stuff could have been. Cellulose on the floor, somebody's feet are stepping on it, it's collecting ashes from the guy who's doing the editing, and nobody cares.
And that's actually a great call to the audience. Let us know what you think. Could we do without all of the vulgar humor, the robot balls, the thong view, the minority bots? Could that all just go away, and we would have had a better Transformers The Fallen? Let us know what you think by accessing our website at twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2guystalking.com. It's time to take a break here at the Two Guys Talking feature film review of Transformers The Fallen. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of paying outrageous prices for proprietary office software? Is half of the budget for your new PC dedicated to buying expensive applications? Or do you simply live in fear that a multinational corporation might sue you for the thousands of dollars of unauthorized software you have on your PC? Well, fear not! Freedom Sampler is here! With Freedom Sampler, you can experience guilt-free computing for the first time, without opening your wallet! Freedom Sampler provides a full office suite, a full-featured photo editor, web browsing and email, and much more! All without any cost, and all without replacing your current operating system! Visit freedomsampler.com to download your free copy today! Freedom Sampler! Taste the freedom!
Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows has just been released. And it's time for the Two Guys Talking Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Book Report. Join Brian and Amy Simatros as they give you the Two Guys Talking Book Report goodness of this most recent, soon-to-be bestseller book. Only on the Two Guys Talking podcast. Log on today and tell us what you think of the book. Check out www.twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2guystalking.com. Thanks for listening. And keep those wands at the ready.
Hi, I'm Paul Spataro. Each year I walk in the Lustgarten Foundation's Pancreatic Cancer Walk. This is a fundraiser that's run each year to raise money and awareness with regard to this terrible disease that takes lives very quickly and painfully. You've probably heard about people who've had this. Patrick Swayze is currently suffering from it, and several other famous people have had it. It's a disease that kills people very, very quickly. And for that reason, because there isn't a surviving group of cancer sufferers, it's kind of become an unknown disease. I do a cancer walk every year since I lost my brother to this disease, and Mike and I have added a link onto his website for the fundraising cancer walk I'm going to do. I would appreciate it very much if everybody would go to that link and donate to this very worthwhile cause. Please check out the show notes for the Two Guys Talking Star Trek review that I did with Mike and Tony. There will be a link there for the cancer walk that I'll be participating in, and I would love it if you could check it out and donate anything. No amount is too small.
Be sure to check out the link to Paul's charity walk at twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2guystalking.com.
This is Paul's tree service.
A person is calling through Relay Missouri. This is operator.
Thanks, but we're not interested.
Who is that?
Just one of those annoying telemarketers.
Wrong. You just hung up on a customer. One who wanted to spend money with your business. A customer who happens to be deaf, hard of hearing, or who has a speech disability, calling you through Relay Missouri. Relay Missouri is a free service that allows people who are deaf, hard of hearing, or who have a speech disability to communicate over the telephone with you and your business. don't hang up. This could be new business. For more information on Relay Missouri, take a minute to log on to RelayMissouri.com and open the door to a whole new group of customers. Become part of a growing community that is silent but can speak volumes for your business. Relay Missouri brings the hearing and deaf, hard of hearing, and people with speech disabilities together at no charge with no sign-up and no monthly fee. Log on to RelayMissouri.com and find out how you can start communicating with these new customers today.
Recession? What recession? There's never been a better time to invest, at least in yourself. Hi, I'm Ian Fagala. Essential Fitness Personal Training continues to grow as a result of our private, comfortable space, making a perfect platform for baby boomers who want a professional, knowledgeable personal training experience. Whether it's taking advantage of our experienced, certified, professional training staff, various in-house massage therapy gurus, or jumping into the ring of focused nutritional counseling from anywhere around the world, Essential Fitness is your one-stop shop for all things fitness. Find out how we can get you the inside information to make that one best investment pay off. It's time to invest in yourself with Essential Fitness. Visit us on the web at www.essentialfitnessstl.com or call us at 314-878-1FIT. That's 314-878-1348. Essential Fitness Personal Training is more than getting fit. It's a true training experience.
Whenever I get that not-so-fresh feeling, I always reach for the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
Dear listeners, it is with great excitement, a lot of faith, and a little fear that I announce the completion of my very first book, Life on the Half Shelley, Pearls of Wisdom and Observations That Stick to You Like Sand in a Wet Bathing Suit, will be available through Amazon.com on May 7th. The book is a collection of some of my most favorite columns, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I enjoy bringing it to you. All proceeds of this book will be given to those in need through charitable organizations. Thank you for listening to my podcast, and thank you for ordering Life on the Half Shelley.
For links to Shelley's new book and more, check out lifeonthehalfshelley.com.
Ability Interpreting was created to connect people who are deaf and hard of hearing. For excellence in sign language interpreting, you can count on Ability. www.interpreterstation.com.
Mike Wilkerson here from the Two Guys Talking Podcast. I've been reviewing television, DVDs, feature films, and more for years now. And there's been very few places on the internet that I can go for unique, quality, civilized discussion for all of them. Last fall, I found one that delivers not only everything I want to see in regard to discussion, but sets the bar for having the most civilized comment sections of any entertainment interest website I've ever seen. It's ScreenRant.com, a product of Vic Holtzman and Company that gives some of the best, most valuable information on past, current, and upcoming films, and offers one of the most satisfying newsletters I've ever experienced. Be sure to visit ScreenRant.com now to check out the current tempered fanboy discussion on some great entertainment-based content, and be sure to subscribe to their spectacular newsletter. You won't be disappointed you did. It's all available right now at ScreenRant.com. Tell them that the Two Guys Talking Podcast sent you.
Let me tell you of the Two Guys Talking Terminator podcast. Historians from England will say that I am a liar, but history is written by those who have hanged heroes. Join the noble duo as they dialogue the weekly adventures of Sarah and John Connor as they fight to avoid the inevitable Judgment Day and defeat the evil hordes from Skynet. It's legend, it's random, and it's only from Two Guys Talking.
The Two Guys Talking Podcast Bug, a truly original autonomous mobile recording solution. Get bit by the podcast bug. www.podcastbug.com.
Fast Freddy's Castle of Common Sense is not only good for your cholesterol, it's a nutritious part of the Two Guys Talking Podcast Network.
Everyone, welcome back to the Two Guys Talking feature film review of Transformers The Fallen. Added latent story plot points. It all starts with the Star Bridge. If I wasn't already disappointed from all of the vulgar crap that we had inside the movie, I was even more surprised that they would dare do something like this. How do you throw in a huge story plot point, i.e. the hunt, for wherever this machine is, inside of Egypt somewhere? Where would we store something huge inside of Egypt? I'll get by that. But then inserting that the hunt plot point that far into the film, you can't do that with people. It doesn't work that way.
I agree with that. I was thinking they were going to have to do something, a point that goes along hand in hand with that. They had to retrieve that shard out of the safe in her motorcycle shop, and I thought the movie was going to revolve around that. We had to do something with this shard, and then you're right that you pick up this completely different plot point with some decrepit Decepticon who turns himself into an SR-71, can't remember anything. What, has he been sleeping for the last 30 years?
With a cane.
Again?
With a cane. What the hell is there a robot doing with a cane?
For a cane. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a total addition that I wasn't ready for, and you drop that other part of the plot completely like a hot rock. Okay, that's useless now. The whole thing with trying to protect the shard and it gives him all these symbols and everything. Okay, we don't need that anymore. I guess that fulfilled its role. Let's drop that, and we'll insert this big chase into Egypt because we need to go on location now.
Yes, decrepit old robot who needs a cane to walk around, and yet somehow when his parts are merged with Optimus, Optimus becomes Super Optimus and can rip apart the ultra bad guy in 5 seconds flat.
I was not buying that. All of the adding in of story points in the end sounds like they thought they needed some more meat inside the story. As opposed to it being a piece of the original story, and I don't care for that.
Well, this again goes back to a little of the point we said before. They wasted too much time on humor. They wasted too much time on those action shots or hero shots or whatever you want to call them, when they're running around, the camera is running around the character to moving in slow motion. They could have taken all that stuff, tossed it out, and given us actual meat to the story.
Yeah.
Because this to me was actually what I was saying earlier about the difference between the first movie and the second movie. The first movie I felt had a story to it.
Yeah.
And it was a more character development. You saw the characters moving from point A to point B. There was change. There was, you know, you can even say growth, relationships building. It's something like where it ended was not where it started.
Yeah,
for the characters.
That's fair. That's fair.
This movie, the characters were pretty much in the same spot in the beginning of the movie and at the end of the movie. And because it says, if we spent more time on them developing characters and filling in these plot holes with the backstory, I think it would have been a much more successful movie. And yet, I still enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I got nothing more to add to that.
The Worthless Sexicon.
Yes, this character made absolutely
no sense whatsoever. Nothing.
Yeah, because
this was inserted for young 13-year-old boys to use a rosy palm. That's all that this was for.
And it was the tongue gag. Of course, they had to have the tongue gag.
It didn't fit anything that goes on before, because no other Transformers are becoming flesh. And you also, the whole point of a Decepticon sits in the lap of Bumblebee, Guardian robot, and it doesn't even notice.
Yeah, I call double dumbass on Bumblebee in this film. I mean, how do you not know? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, you got to call double dumbass on the producers on this one, or whoever was writing these. You know what? As I'm listening to us talk about this, I'm thinking maybe what they were doing is rewrites on set. Well, what if we do this here and make this even better and blow this up and overblow the stuff that they had? Maybe they had these as lesser gags, but it just got out of control. Who knows? But in any event, it is out of control, and I blame the writers or whoever drove that to that point, that's a double dumbass on them, because it just didn't need to be there.
And it would have made a lot more sense, and it would have fit the story, and done everything they had, you know, for why the Decepticons had something following Sam, make it, you know, one of the small ones turning into his iPod.
Something.
Would have done everything they wanted to do with the sex bot. It would have fit the theme of the fact that these things turn into machines.
Yeah, the whole point was to collect information from Sam.
Right.
And what the, you know, it being a piece of technology that he had on his person, like an iPod or whatever piece of technology they wanted to put in for product placement, would have been perfect, because they're trying to garner the symbols. And so why not turn into, like, the Bluetooth ear sets that he's got or something, and then while he's writing, scribbling the symbols nonsensically, but they're making sense, someone can actually surveil what he's writing, and then there's, believe it or not, actual story points paying off, instead of the sex pot Decepticon that sticks her tongue down Sam's throat. That doesn't make any sense.
That is there partially seeming to only cause a fight between him and the Megan Fox character, which makes absolutely no sense either, and served no purpose.
Yeah, which was also a point of plot that I could have done without. I don't need to know their relationship. I don't care how they're getting on. Good for them. They're still together. But you're right. All that did is serve to drive the wedge between them. And it didn't even last more than that scene, because she comes running back in as he's getting beat up by it. Actually, at the end, I thought it was kind of funny, because he did pull off screaming like a little bitch really good.
Wasted opportunities. This is a new segment that we're throwing into this Transformers Revenge of the Fallen review, just simply because there was that much bad stuff to list off, and so we're going to list it in this one. The first that we have here in the list is the fodder Cyclebots. Can you say
they were
worthless?
Red shirts for the Autobots.
It wasn't. They weren't even red shirts. I mean, the destruction. It was like, ring, that's it. You know nothing about any of the characters. There's no character development at all. In fact, I provide you guys this point. I think that they were inserted digitally at the end. I don't even think they were ever planned.
Well, they are characters that actually did show up in the cartoons.
Yes.
And I think some of it was they were trying to put every cartoon character they could think of onto the movie, even though they didn't give any time of development for them, making really a whole lot of sense. It's like Dave was mentioning earlier, before we started the show, about Sideswipe, who was a Corvette. Until he brought him up, I had totally forgot that it was, you know, I thought it was a cool looking scene when Sideswipe slices the Decepticon in half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was
yeah.
a well-constructed thing. And until he mentioned him, I didn't even realize that we never saw that character again for the rest of the movie.
Well, and if we did, he was fighting a gray Decepticon, and so you'd never know if he was fighting or not.
Exactly. They were probably meshed together with the same interchangeable colors. You couldn't tell what he was anyway.
Maybe he's the one that actually killed Optimus, and it wasn't Megatron. They just, Optimus was starting to fight, and he couldn't tell the difference between his own men and the other guy.
He got covered with gray mud in the forest, and so he couldn't tell that Optimus wasn't a Decepticon.
Your Cyclebot, I was just thinking back to the movie. They had riders that were enhanced on them by holograph, so they had people on them, too, to look normal to humans when they were out and about in town. What's-her-face, the Sexpot bot, she was real, but they had to holograph humans onto these motorcycles. Why couldn't they just make real riders on them if they could make her flesh and blood?
Yeah. Again, it's all the little tiny wasted opportunities that mold themselves into nitpicks inside of Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. falling too fast. Okay, so we have this orgasmic demigod robot that's been sitting on a nefarious hidden moon outside of Saturn someplace for eons, waiting for someone to hitch him a ride? What the hell is this? And then they get him to Earth. Okay, all right, fine. Hello, I'm the Fallen. I'm going to take over, and oops, I'm dead.
Yeah, it's also like this. Six primes could not beat him in the beginning of the movie. That was sort of the point. The six primes had to grab the Matrix, go into hiding, using their bodies to hide the Matrix from the Fallen, and then centuries later, their descendant Optimus Prime merges with this old bot who's falling apart himself, yet somehow when the two come together, Optimus tears this most powerful of the primes apart in 5 seconds. And they do it also so, and to be honest, this is one of the scenes where I think the filming sucked. It really didn't give us a good view of the fight between Optimus and the Fallen.
No. No, the only thing that was decent at the end of that fight was, of course, the Fallen getting the sword through the head. That was it. The rest of it was, again, the jumble of robots fighting robots. And it needs to not be that for a fight against Optimus Prime asterisk with all the cool 40-year-old technology against the baddest-ass Decepticon ever. It needs to be something different.
That fight was way too short. That was supposed to be the pinnacle fight. That was the one that leads up to it. And if I wasn't disappointed enough when the railgun destroyed that other gigantic Decepticon in one shot, this was even more so because the fight lasted, what, 10 seconds and it was over?
Oh, yeah. It is not just against, if you notice, he didn't just beat the Fallen. He beat the Fallen, Megatron, and Starscream in 5 seconds flat.
Yeah, not so Megatron. Right, yeah.
Yes.
Again, to go back to something that I know we really didn't focus on enough, Megatron needs to not be not so Megatron slash becomes a pawn in this. He needs to be something completely different, or what the supposition we provided before was, how about not having him in this movie?
Yeah, Megatron did not add anything to the movie.
Nothing.
The only thing that you may say justifiable is, as far as we can tell, Megatron's the one who killed Optimus Prime, and probably having somebody else kill Optimus besides Megatron doesn't work.
How about this?
But,
imagine this, guys. All right, Starscream, knowing that Megatron is now dead, decides to go and resurrect the baddest-ass Decepticon ever, and he happens to know that he's on the backside of one of the moons of Saturn. And so he goes there, and he anticipates that the Fallen will go, "I can't believe you're so smart, Starscream. Yes, bring me to Earth. Be my chariot to crush the last remaining Prime." And then, of course, he doesn't. The Fallen would treat him like an asshole like everybody does, and he'd bring him back to Earth, and then he'd get squashed like a bug just like Megatron did, and then everything would happen in the movie, and then you'd be more satisfied, and Megatron doesn't become not so Megatron.
And then you could have had the Megatron resurrection in the final scene.
Yeah, and then you're prepped and ready for the third film. Dun, da, da, da.
Well, at least they didn't try killing Megatron again in this movie and then have to resurrect him again for the third movie.
Yeah, I did like that they fly off cowardly like they did inside of every single episode of the Transformers when it was a cartoon. That fit perfectly. But imagine, what if they'd have taken that step that we just explained? We'd like to know what you think about that. Let us know what you think about my giant Megatron doesn't need to be in the second film piece by accessing our website at twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2guystalking.com, and let us know what you think.
Well, to be honest with you, I thought that the Fallen was supposed to be Megatron getting resurrected, Revenge of the Fallen.
Everyone thought that.
I thought that was supposed to be the whole gist of it, that it was his sole revenge. They come and rescue him, bring him up, and he has his deal, like Empire Strikes Back, you know, and Autobots are left reeling at the end of this one, and they got to come back in the third one, and then we have our closure.
Well, let's face it. The name of a villain called The Fallen, and you can't blame Michael Bay for this because he's not the one who created The Fallen. The Fallen originated in a comic book, I believe. Yeah, in one of the comics. Totally different character. I mean, a completely different storyline. But calling somebody The Fallen, not the most creative and most awe-inspiring name. It's like, we got to run from the Fallen. Wait a minute. If he fell, that kind of means
he's
failed.
A dumbass.
Yeah, it's like,
let's beat up the dumbass again.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes, let's beat up the guy who trips. I mean, let's run away from the guy who trips, apparently, or something. So calling the character The Fallen, I did know that Megatron was not The Fallen because I had caught some scuttlebutt. It was one of the few things. I did try, for the most part, avoiding spoilers for this movie.
I did.
But I did know that The Fallen represented something else. I didn't know what it represented. I just knew it wasn't Megatron. And to be honest, I didn't think it was a Decepticon at all. But
as we're talking about it and the namesake itself, I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking Fallen as in Fallen Angel. I mean, he used to be one of the good guys, but he was the one that decided, you know what, to hell with inhabited planets and we have to spare him. We're going to take the sun anyway. So he's like the archangel that fell from heaven, and he's that might have something to do with it.
Yeah, but you know what? I call giant BS on trying to wrap the Transformers into some kind of biblical reference. With all of the literal energon that's inside of all of the things that are Transformers, there has to be something that they can do, except, of course, have the pseudo-black robots rip on each other because, hey, homie, it's time to rip on other Autobots and talk like black folk.
The Jar Jar Binks of the Transformer world.
Just terrible. There's not supposed to be that inside of a Transformers film.
Going back to the thing about something you had said earlier and you just mentioned before about the fall and coming to Earth, and then they decide, oh, we don't want to destroy human life on Earth. I'm trying to figure out, how in the world do you go? You build all this stuff in the ancient things. People are living right next door to you, and you not notice that there's life on the planet. They said they aren't going to destroy any world where there's, you know, any sun where there's life on the planet. How did they miss it?
I have a better supposition. Who cares? How about their maniacal, giant, ass-kicking robots that don't really have any prime directive, and all they want to do is suckle the teat of Earth? how about that?
That would have made a little more sense.
how about the big, giant, mean robots are big and giant and mean? Period, paragraph. Ramon Rodriguez.
Why?
Too much. My notes here when I
who is Ramon Rodriguez? Dave, who is Ramon? Who is he?
The letters.
I don't even know who he is. Who is he?
Too much Ramon. He played in a couple of shows on TV.
And so that's his call to glory, is that he was on a couple of shows.
It says he's on The Wire and Daybreak, and that's pretty much it. Oh, I'm sorry. He was also in The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3, but I don't have any idea what part he played because I haven't seen that one yet.
I think he played the part of... He was worthless.
Yeah,
his whole little entourage...
Consummate whiner who steals way too much of Shia LaBeouf's screen time. The guy has no purpose. He doesn't need to be there. Not even ever shown in the movie. I don't care about his roommates. I don't care about their geek squad. It was just a complete distraction from the movie. I kept looking, even after the movie, I'm looking on the website here at IMDb, trying to find out, who is he related to in this movie that he got such a big role? I want to know who put him here and why.
I actually know the reason why, and this is a total guess upon my part because it totally failed in their doing this. I think he was to give a reason why the other characters would be going into exposition about what's going on. So he would be like, oh, we got to explain this to him, so this for we can explain it to the audience and be justified in doing it. However, not needed, totally pointless, totally failed if that was what they were trying to do with the character. Either that or they can't afford Shia LaBeouf for the next movie and they're planning to replace him with this guy.
You know, I actually, that thought crossed my mind. The last thing you said as well, I mean, maybe Shia has other plans and he's opted out of the third one.
Yeah, Shia's got Indy 5.
That might go along into why it felt like they threw the whole entire toy chest at us in this movie. Maybe this is the end, or maybe some of the character continuity that we talked about earlier is not going to happen in the third one. That might be very well possible.
Picking the nits, the pieces that could go away. Now, in addition to everything that we put mostly on the bad list, we've talked about a bunch of things inside this film that could just go away. I want to start the list with the mother. There's nothing wrong with the mother. There's nothing wrong with the relationship that she has with Shia. There's nothing wrong with the relationship that the father and the mother have. But inside of this movie, if you remove the mother, you gain everything for this film. Terrible. Yeah. Terrible. You know, going off to college, okay, that's endearing, and then it should be done. But when she goes and then she just becomes a pot-soaking retard, I don't have any interest in that.
The hysterical pot-smoking retard who never shuts up. You can't turn her off. You wish almost that she was a Decepticon because you want to have the off switch. Turn her off. Please shut up. Because she was, and a lot of the characters that were supposed to be comic relief, or the scenes that they use them in comic relief, they turned into caricatures of themselves. They weren't characters. She was a much better, solid, grounded character in the first movie, where she was just a little bit flighty, a little naive, and not nearly over the top.
What I really hate is where they then take the father. There's a really nice, touching scene with the father towards the end of the film.
Exactly.
Where the hell is that? Where is Shia caring about his family? And I hate that there are so many vulgar scenes that are continued and showcased everywhere, but you only have a tiny little glimpse of what he really cares about his parents. That's what needed to be brought to the forefront. That's what will make you care.
Right. That would draw you into caring for the characters more than anything else, giving them some humanity and you know, the love that's shown there in that one scene by him not, you know, by him having to let go. He's the one who has to let go at that point. Obviously, the other stuff was put in where the mother had to let go, and they prefaced that to this scene, but it was so overdone and over the top that it just made you forget about it, and this was the scene that they needed more.
Yeah, there were a few things of, like you said, because it goes along with the little bot, the fact that the minority bots can't read. They have to, so they happen to have this, my little...
I can't even believe that we're talking about bulls like that. That's what I mean about this movie, is that this could have been such a great movie, but we have to take the time to go ahead and nitpick on the bots can't read. How stupid is that?
It detracts from the storyline and detracts from the movie and makes you walk away and say, damn it, I can't believe I spent $75 to go to this movie with my family, and I'm left thinking about this instead of thinking about the plot line and the story and how cool it was to watch all these robots kick ass. I'm talking to myself and my wife. We're talking about the Jar Jar Binks effect with these two idiots and the fact that the sex pod bot and all the innuendo that was in there. But this is, it falls into our nitpick category, but it's all stuff that leaves you talking about that instead of the enjoyment that you had seeing the robots kicking ass on screen in their full glory.
Yeah.
Going right along with that, I've mentioned this, Mike, when we walked out of the theater, from the thong shot at the Smithsonian up until they teleported mysteriously out of the blue new power to Egypt, that entire scene, well, the thong shot is the most egregious thing to get rid of.
I've but forgotten even it that, because it's so egregious.
Yeah, then that little toy robot Decepticon that changes sides is humping Megan Fox's leg like an animal, and it's like
when that scene was on, I actually looked at you.
Yeah,
it's like why are we here?
I want entire segment though, from the thong shock to appearing in Egypt, to be gone. It's like there's nothing. I mean, I realize they brought in the old dude and that whole thing. That part was needed for telling the story to go on a little bit. But that whole scene, I just want that thing to be clipped, thrown away, because it sucked and it really took away from the movie.
What if instead of melding with the old SR-71 Blackbird with crutch/cane guy, he actually merged with the little dynamo foot-humping robot and humped the fallen to death? I mean, why not, right? If you're going to be ridiculous, yeah. Why not be ridiculous?
Else. We're in the middle of a fight scene where the whole kitchen is exploding in the first half of the movie. All those Decepticons are going nuts, and Sam is in there fighting for his life, and they have a cut scene to the two dogs humping. Please.
Twice.
Why? Twice. Why was that necessary?
I have no idea. It's like that's the visage of why you put midgets in commercials. Why do you put midgets in commercials? Oh, well, because you put midgets in commercials. No, you don't put midgets in commercials because it's not that funny. It's not instant funny when you see a dog humping. Sorry.
I just don't understand why we have to see that in the middle of this life-threatening situation.
I read this on one board. They said anyone under 25 is loving it. Everyone over 25 is going, oh, my. It's just like, why? Oh. It's humor geared for, you know, it's juvenile humor. That's what it is. It's juvenile humor. It's not...
I call BS on all of that. There's no reason to go in the direction that will take it into the toilet. There's way too much here that needs not be thrown
away. Absolutely not. And it's like they purposely pointed this movie at a different demographic, the fast food demographic. I don't know why they did that. They didn't need to do that. I mean, it's that Spielberg's got his name on this. Where the hell did this thing turn to that? It doesn't need to be there.
Dog humping is when this movie turned, sadly. I hate to go back to that.
Scenes.
Yeah, the Star Bridge and the dog humping. Those were the two ones that just...
How is it that the Shard, and this didn't even occur really in the first movie, was a little question, but they followed it through in this movie. How is it the Shard, the source of all life, the all spark, every single machine it turns, brings to life, is evil?
Yeah, How come it touches the stuff in the kitchen and they all instantly turn into evil Decepticon bots? Good point.
Maybe because it wasn't breakfast time and breakfast didn't need to be made? I don't know. It needs to not be all of those little bits. And that's what's so terribly frustrating to have this movie, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen, inside of this Two Guys Talking podcast review. It's time for the ratings roundup. It's time to provide ratings for this movie, Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Dave, we're going to start with you. Where on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the best, 1 being the most dog humpiness, do you find this film?
I'm going to have to say I would rate this probably a 7 on that scale. Because I really enjoyed the movie for the special effects and what that was supposed to be. I like the storyline, like I said earlier, being an outsider to the whole storyline. I thought it was great. I enjoyed it. But the things that brought it down to a 7, the dog humping, the stuff that we touched on, the nitpicky stuff, again, the stuff that I walked out of the theater saying, damn it, that just didn't need to be there.
I think the best part of the review so far is that you actually spent $75 to take your family to this film. And so that when people go, oh, come on, Mike, you guys are tough on films. Well, it's because it's an investment. It's a time and a money investment to go and see a film, especially with your entire family. And so when you make that investment, you want it to pay off at the end. And when it doesn't, it pisses you off. Kip, what did you think?
I find it funny because, like, on one hand, I would give it this a 7 because I thought it was a good movie. I enjoyed it. It was a fun ride. But on the other hand, there's a part of that movie that makes it a 3. So I'm going to average it to say I'll give it a 5 overall.
Okay, so 5 of 10 for Transformers Revenge of the Fallen for Kip. And I chime in kind of in the middle of both of these. The base fundamental nature of Transformers is that it's something I dearly love, and it makes me harken back to a time where things were a lot more simple. The problem is that this movie doesn't make things simple. It makes them stupid often. And so a movie that I would have easily given a 7, I have to chalk down to another 5. You'll remember our Terminator review of Terminator Salvation also was a 5. And so for 2 of the hugest movies this summer, I've got 5s. That's not right. It's not supposed to work like that. And we're wondering what you thought of this movie. Again, access our website at twoguystalking.com. Click on the contact button in the top right-hand side and let us know what you think on a scale of 1 to 10 where Transformers Revenge of the Fallen landed for you. The future of the franchise. Kip, where does this take us? We know that it's made a giant assload of cash. We know that there are people that love this series, as all 3 of us do. Where do we go from here?
I suspect we'll see 1 to 2 more movies. I think we may end up seeing this series run a little bit like the Batman series, when starting with the Michael Keaton Batman all the way through to the George Clooney Batman.
Mm-hmm.
First movie, very solid, very strong. And by the time we got to the end, it was campy and everybody thought it was ridiculous. Terminator has the potential of doing that, where we'll have some good movies, but each one is going to progressively go down. You know, it's going to take some points that were minor and funny or okay in where they were minor aspect, and they're just going to get blown up into bigger and bigger and bigger as later movies go on. But I think we'll still have another probably 1 or 2 good, enjoyable movies, and then we'll probably get to one that was like, okay, this is the final show. This is the stop making these movies. Let's get a new director, new direction and everything.
I think that this series is going to continue, and I think the saving grace of this series is going to be the special effects. If ILM signs on with this and Spielberg puts his name on the next one, they're going to have solid special effects, and I think that's going to be the only thing that a lot of people are going to look forward to seeing with this. If this show is any indication of how the series is going to go, it's going to just progress down the toilet, and the next one probably won't be watchable by people like us.
Yeah, I've got to shoot the middle of both of you, mostly because they know what kind of a money machine they have here. They know the characters. There's no doubt about that. They know who Optimus Prime is. They know where Megatron is supposed to fall inside of the puzzle pieces. I think they've also got a good lock on who Sam is supposed to be. He really is the one that the story follows, and then things happen behind him. And I don't mind them painting Shia LaBeouf like that, because Shia LaBeouf does well in a role like that. So I think we'll see at least one more film. There's no way that another film can't be made. The money that this film is making, there has to be at least one more. And so we'll see one more. Where the quality of that will be, I have no idea. And so we come to the end of the Two Guys Talking feature film Transformers Revenge of the Fallen review here on the Two Guys Talking podcast. I'm Mike Wilkerson, one of your hosts.
I'm Kip Lewis, your second host.
And I am Dave Grohl, and I've been your third host.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this edition of the Two Guys Talking Show. We hope you'll tell your friends and coworkers about us, and don't forget to put us on your podcast list. As always, you can visit and contact us online at twoguystalking.com. That's the number 2, guystalking.com. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.